I spoke to Linda Sparrow, who's the president of Bangalore Koalas and a trained koala rescuer with Friends of the Koala. Linda became an accidental campaigner when she and some friends started taking action to save a local stand of trees. 4 years later, they're linking up bush areas and aiming to plant 250,000 trees by 2025. Here's my talk with Linda. I've got Linda Sparrow with me here today. And Linda, I'd love to hear from you what your role is. What's your koala role?
Okay, well, I'm president of Bangalore Koalas. And as well as that, I'm also a trained koala rescuer with Friends of the Koala that I'm a member of as well.
Great, fantastic. How long have you been doing that?
So we've been going for 4 years now. So we started roughly April in 2016.
Okay, great, fantastic. And so whereabouts do you work? Do you have a couple of different places that you're based, or are you out and about?
I run an office, home office. So I run my business, which is advertising, and I run Bangalore Koalas as well. So it's full time. So I do both full time, and that's up here in Bangalore in the Northern Rivers. But where we're covering, the area that Bangalore Koalas is covering, is what started out just in Bangalore. We are now covering the Northern Rivers of New South Wales. So we've grown as the trees that we've planted have grown, and we've expanded. So our corridor is going from Byron Bay and surrounds, and we're now heading out towards Tenterfield.
Okay.
And we're heading up to the Queensland border, and we're heading down to Grafton. And that's all from people contacting us saying they wanted to join our corridor.
Is that landowners then contacting you and asking what you can do, what they can do to help?
Exactly. Like we started where we just did a letterbox drop in the local area of Bangalore just to get people to help us weed and clear out the around the base of these established trees. And then we did a joint planting with Byron Council. And from that, there was some local media and stuff like that. And ever since then, people have contacted us, us contacting them.
So people have contacted you. That's really interesting. So you would probably say then that people are interested in koalas and in saving the koala.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like we are getting contacted all the time by people. And it's just amazing.
Fantastic. So tell us about a typical project that you would do or an activity inside a bigger project. So you've mentioned planting. I'd love to hear more about that.
So Bangalore, what we're about creating this corridor. So we're trying to link existing habitat and we're trying to create more habitat. So it's like creating stepping stones across the landscape. So what we're doing is we might go to one property and plant their property, and then their neighbours get interested. So then we do their neighbours. So a lot of the plantings we've done, we might be doing like four properties in one street. And so we're trying to connect where we can see there's habitat. So I work with the councils.
Okay.
And so we can see where there's mapped habitat, where there's sightings. So where we know there's actually koalas. So we won't go and plant on a property that there's no koalas anywhere near and there's no habitat.
No.
We make sure that it's going to link up. So we're sort of linking up all these towns across the Northern Rivers, and it's spreading and spreading. And yeah, so we're all about connecting habitat and fragmented populations of koalas so that they can actually move across and breed, and so you get more genetic diversity rather than having these small populations of koalas that start inbreeding because they can't go anywhere else. When we started 4 years ago, the ecologist for Byron Council, she said to me that they think that the population of koalas here in Bangalore is quite unique, their genetic diversity. So that's why we're working really hard to get them away from the residential area. So we're trying to plant on the western side of town to get them to move away from, you know, where you've got humans and cars and dogs and all that sort of stuff. And so then they can connect to other populations that are in the neighbouring town of Possum Creek and Binnaburra.
Great. So you're basically trying to improve their nightlife.
Yeah, Exactly.
That's fantastic. No, it's really interesting because it is critical. And I was just talking to a koala ecologist who was telling me about how koalas patrol their territories, particularly the males. And so this idea that koalas don't sit in one tree is something I'd really like us to share with the kids.
Oh, look, exactly. So in the mating season, where up here it's roughly July, August through to March, you've got the males, they're kicking out the younger males out of the territory, and also some of the younger females get kicked out. So they've got to go out and find other places to, you know, live. And that's when you get the higher amount of roadkill, because especially in this Bangalore area, you've got the M1 going through. You've got some big main roads, and there are some hotspot areas where they're getting killed. So then we also are working with getting flashing signage up and other road signs, which we've like designed, and then we've fundraised to get those signs out. So across, especially in the Byron Shire, there's a lot of our Corflute signs. So they look like a road sign, and they're fluoro yellow, so they really stick out. And so people come to us and say, we're worried about koalas here. We give them signs, they put them up. And so there's a whole lot of factors going into what we're doing.
Design responses to and designed environments can often help wildlife just as much as they make human lives interesting or easier. And we've all heard or seen pictures of these animal overpasses or animal underpasses to freeways. Do those work for koalas, or is that a problem?
Well, no, they do. They do. But the problem is those overpasses and underpasses, they have to be done before, you know, they have to be taken into account right at the very beginning when the government RMS are doing the designs for those roads. It's not like you can do something like that after. That's where you get a lot of wildlife fencing along the main road, so like the M1. So they'll have wildlife fencing there to try and stop the koalas crossing. But then what happens there, it's one of those really hard issues, because if you're up here, they put through the Ballina bypass, cut through a koala population, a big koala population, and then you're splitting the population if you're putting up this fencing and stuff like that. So it's one of those.
So that basically divides your genetically diverse population into half, which makes it much less genetically diverse, and then your breeding might start to fall apart. Yeah, is that what you're saying?
It just means that they can't, you know, cross the landscape how they used to cross the landscape. So, you know, they'll try and you'll see pictures of a koala on the fencing along a main road, and they're hanging upside down from it, you know, like they're trying to get over, and you can't tell a koala, no, you can't go that way. So, you know, if they want to go from one tree to another and it means crossing a busy road, they're not that intelligent that they'll think, oh, I'll go an easier way. They just want to go straight ahead. And so you've got all these other factors coming into why our poor koalas are in the state they are at the moment.
Yeah, fair enough. Really well put too. Thank you. What attracts people to koalas, do you think?
Well, I mean, seriously, you have a look at a koala. How can you not be attracted to them?
No kidding.
they're so cute, and they're unique. I mean, you know, when they're curled up in the tree, they look like a small bear, hence why people incorrectly call them a koala bear. So it's really hard, especially when you start working with koalas, it's really hard not to fall in love with them, because I mean, you know, they can bite you, they can scratch you when you're trying to rescue them, and they can be really sick. They will fight their hardest to avoid getting taken off the tree. So, you know, I've got the bite marks and the scratch marks, and they put up a big fight. They're strong little things, but they are adorable.
That's a really good point to make. They're wild animals. They're not pets.
No, exactly. If you come across koala and it's just sitting on the ground and it lets you walk up to it and it lets you pat it, that's a very sick koala.
I wanted to know how much a koala weighs. An adult koala, female or male, will probably be different.
It depends on the, you know, the area and how old they are and all that sort of stuff, because the koalas up here on the northern, like in the north here, they are, they're smaller and they're not as fluffy as the koalas you get down in Victoria and South Australia. Their koalas are bigger and their koalas are a lot hairier and fluffier than the koalas you get up here.
Interesting. And are they different? Different strains of the same, yeah, they're different strains of the same species, obviously. What are the different types called?
It's broken up by like the, it's the genetic thing that's happening down there. So they're sort of like, they're not as diverse, the koalas up there. So the koalas, say, up here in the northern New South Wales, because there is a bit of crossover with the genetics with the southeast Queensland ones, because there's obviously a bit of a crossover and stuff like that. So they're all the same. It's just that down there, it's a bit like, to give you an example, an echidna down in Tasmania and Victoria is actually hairier than the ones you get up here, because they need it because of the weather, because it's colder. So it's colder, they need thicker coats and stuff like that. So it's just how they've evolved.
Of course. Yeah.
And so, yeah, so it's like you can see, if you ever go and have a look at, you know, there are things on that you can see, and it shows a difference between a northern koala and a southern koala, and it's like the difference. They're just much bigger and fluffier.
Okay, great. Because I guess I was erroneously thinking of the difference between, say, red kangaroos and grey kangaroos, but it's not that. It's to do with their climate, their habitat, their food source.
Yeah. So, yep. For example, northern koalas, a male might average weight could be like, say, 6.5 kilos, and a southern koala could weigh twice that much.
Okay.
And a female's about 5 kilos average, where in the north, but in the south, it's closer to 8.5 kilos.
Okay, that's really interesting. I'm just curious about that. So going back to my questions, what do most people get right about koalas?
Well, most people get, well, obviously that the main one is that they're only found here in Australia, so they're unique to us. You can't get them anywhere else in the world. Their closest relative is actually the wombat.
Yeah.
So that's the main thing. And the thing that they get most wrong is, more often than not, when I get a phone call or we get a call to go out to see a koala that people might think is sick or whatever, and they'll say it's a joey, and you go there, and 99% of the time it's an adult. It's just that when they curl up into a ball, they just look like they're small, and especially if they're high in the tree, they look really small.
Yeah. But
so if when it's curled up in a ball and it looks smaller than a soccer ball, then that's a joey. So anything that looks, when it's curled up and looks bigger than a soccer ball, is an adult.
And interesting, that was kind of why I asked how much they weigh, because I was curious to see if people's expectations of how big a koala is are actually not quite correct.
Yeah, and it varies. It varies on their health, their age, where they are.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. I almost feel silly asking question number 7, which is, why do you care about koalas? And it's obvious that you do, but what is it that...
Once I started rescuing koalas, I soon realised just how vulnerable they were. And they've got so much going against them with, you know, they're susceptible to the same sort of diseases that humans get. So they have cancers, they have, you know, kidney failures, tumours, all sorts of stuff. So they have all the same sort of stuff that we get. And then when you hear a koala cry, which I have when I've done some rescues, you never forget that sound. It's just the most heartbreaking sound. And from that moment onwards, I became dedicated to doing all I could to save koalas.
Fair enough. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? If you feel a connection with the animal too, and you can understand its pain, then why would you not help?
Exactly. And they need all the help that they can get right now.
Yeah. Why do you think other people care about koalas?
I think the most pivotal moment where collectively people became more aware of the plight of koalas was in the recent months with the bushfires. That brought it up there right in front of everyone in Australia and across the world. And people just saw how vulnerable they were. And so not only vulnerable to droughts, but to fires, and their very survival now depends on us. And that's why Bangalow Koalas is working really hard to plant out as many trees as possible in the northern rivers. So in the future, they're going to have habitat, they're going to have homes, and they're going to have hope.
Fantastic. That's really good. Yeah. We've covered this a little bit, but is there anything else you'd like to say about this, what threats there are, or give me a list of the threats that you feel are most
important?
Well,
habitat loss is the biggest threat, not only from the logging in native forests, but large swathes of farmland being cleared and developments across the state that continue to like remove their homes. And you add to that dog attacks and car strikes, and it all adds up to very stressed koalas, and that then brings on disease.
What was your first moment that got you into koalas, or was it becoming a koala rescuer that kicked you off? Was there something else?
It was a simple phone call from a friend of mine 4 years ago, and it was out of the blue. And this friend here in Bangalore just rang me and said, "Linda, I need your help in saving the koalas." And I just went, "Of course you do." And then it was about a 400 metre stretch of established koala trees that was on along the boundary of this property, and they were worried about the trees being, you know, the guy was a developer. And yeah, we did a letterbox drop trying to get people and help weed along the base of it. And there hadn't been from the local community many recordings of koala sightings in Byron to the Byron Council. So we did a letterbox drop with the council asking people to record their sightings, and then all these people started sighting, and then suddenly it just went from there.
So there's a bit of citizen science involvement there as well.
There is a lot of citizen science, and in fact we're also now, after the fires, we're also taking into account the platypus. So we've, just as of this week, I'm doing another thing, getting people to record sightings of platypus, so that when we do our plantings, and if there's riparian areas, so along the creeks and rivers or whatever, then we take into account, if we know there's platypus there, that we will look at planting to make sure we're helping them as well.
Fantastic. And I suppose that's, we use the term umbrella species in a lot of the lessons and the educational material, because that's kind of how it works, that protecting the koala protects so many other species as well as the habitat.
Exactly, because we're planting for, we actually, in the trees we're planting things for the black cockatoos, we're planting things for the flying foxes and birds and bees and possums and everything.
So my last question is, if you could make one thing happen to help save koalas, what would it be?
If we could stop the logging in the native forests and the land clearing, then the koalas have got a chance. So that's why we've actually, our goal is to plant 250,000 trees by the end of 2025. And we want to plant 40,000 this year alone. So if we could stop the logging, then we can save our koalas and everything else that lives in those forests.
Fantastic. So kids who want to help do something to save koalas can get involved in lots of different ways, can't they?
Oh, totally, totally. I mean, most of our plantings, we might have three generations that are coming along. So it's the kids, the parents, the grandparents, and the kids, you know, they're getting their, you know, when they see road signs up for koalas, they're telling their parents to slow down, and, you know, seeing the koalas, and we do kitty workshops. So we go to primary schools and preschools, and I do it with Friends of the Koala, and we teach them the difference between a healthy koala and a sick koala and what to do. So we started from nothing. We started just from a group of friends, and we're now got this massive, huge goal of what we're doing. And we've partnered with IFOR, the International Fund of Animal Welfare, and they're helping us do what we're doing. So from little things, small, big things can happen.
That's fantastic. And all kudos to you for that. I love the comment that you started as a group of friends and now you have this huge impact. I think that's a really important message for the students involved in Koala Smart. That's what we hope that many of them will be able to find their passion project.
I think the most important thing is that, you know, we've each got to help save the koala. We can't, you know, it's not up to what, we don't need the government to do it if we've got all these grassroots level groups across the country. I'm doing my best to make sure that there is a future for koalas, and I think we need the kids involved in that.
Fantastic, because it's their future as well as ours.
Exactly.
For everybody.
And the last thing I like to say is, if you can't save the koala, you can't save anything. And that's the true story, because if we can't save that, if we lose koalas, then all the other species that are not quite, you know, cute and cuddly and whatever, they've got no hope.
This interview is part of the Koala Smart Program, an initiative of Lions Club Tacking Point, funded by the New South Wales Department of Planning, Industry and the Environment. You can get all the Koala Smart resources and activities at koalasmart.org.au.